Time for another check-in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our weekly Tacky Talks. Hey, Tacky, how are you?
Hey, Joe. Good to see you. We had a week off because of scheduling issues, but it's always great to be back, despite the fact all of us are very busy, as you are as well. And I'm sure our entire audience is busy as we finish the season on school and vacation, and the start of summer has already begun. And I'm sure everybody got lots going on as the weather gets warmer.
Yeah, actually, start with some fun stuff. I saw you at the Flag Day Parade. It looked like you were enjoying yourself.
Yeah, actually a pretty good time. The weather was perfect. Didn't get beat on the sun too hard. Wonderful crowd out there. You know, again, we have some great volunteers, and city did an incredible job on parks and police and bring fire and bring all these different organization and bands and clowns and different trucks. And of course, always the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, and all the different sports teams, their kids marched. And it was a wonderful time had by all. So for those who know, I actually live right across from Black Creek Marsh. I don't have to stick around for the fireworks.
You get a front row seat.
My entire adult life since 1978, we've been looking at fireworks across the marsh.
Yeah, they were spectacular too. Also noteworthy is Quincy Asian Resources marked their 20th anniversary celebration, actually the night before the parade.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend, obviously. And it is the 20th anniversary, even though it's technically its 21st year, but because of COVID, we had to push it out. But it is remarkable for an organization to go this long, especially in human services where the margins are thin and money is tight. And that night I reminded folks, this organization started 2001, which is the year of 9/11. Then we had the dot-com bust right after, and then you followed by the 08 recession and now COVID, and overcome a lot of different economic areas and challenges, because not-for-profits aren't the same as private business, how they raise money. And when there's no money to be raised, it can be very hard. But the August moon's on August 21st, one of the signature events coming up. And but it was also great to see community leaders get recognized. And of course, the scholarship award winners for the high school kids.
Yeah, of course, Corey's mission has expanded dramatically since it was first started. And they really reach out beyond the borders of Quincy now and beyond the Asian population as well.
Yes, it's an immigrant-based organization. We have served non-Asians in the organization. That people don't realize that English classes does not stop ethnicity. People who need referral services, we can kind of work through people with broken English. So it isn't like we've never serviced anybody that wasn't Asian. We service anybody that comes through the door the best we can. But it's now a shift in the world we live in regarding the rising immigration in the U.S. And, we always point now to the Afghans, the Haitians, in particular as our latest refugees, and Ukrainians are also on the way. Mm-hmm. So the Asian has been pivoting for a bit of time to do that. And, we also were able to survive through COVID, by being more innovative, landing the New York City contract on food security, getting whistles for during Asian racism's height, which I still don't believe the height's quite there yet. I think there's still more to come this summer. But, the ability to work with City of New York and New York organizations, and of course, landing the Amazon contract in the midst of COVID to operate its Rhode Island site, as well as another location in Massachusetts that they're working on for job placement and to try to create one-stop shopping for human services at a workplace for a predominantly immigrant population is a model that is not often seen, that you can bring people who need help to the place they work.
Yeah, I know they're really active in the Quincy Public Schools and even have an outreach location in Randolph for the population there too.
Yes, and my brother, who don't know, actually does the youth development there, and he has been in Weymouth as well. There's been a rise of racist issues in Weymouth that the school department got very well ahead of. They decided not to wait for anything to happen, and for the last 3-4 years, I've actually had a lot of more engagement with kids of color, as well as intervention before something happens. And stuff is happening all around us, but Quincy remains the core area. We still have a non-white population of close to 40%. if not over at this point. And I think the census shows about 20% of the population will speak English as a first language.
Yep, that sounds right.
So, you know, there's no shortage of work done with the senior housing, with the kids, workforce development, information referral services, and of course, partnering with our different agencies around us. And, you know, there's some more exciting news coming down the road. They got some projects that got, not surprising, a lot of projects got suspended during COVID, but they're moving forward again, those projects, despite the hiatus.
Oh, okay. We'll look forward to that. Excellent. We've got a great relationship with them here at QATV, so I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that in the future. Seeing as we're on the topic of immigrants, can we talk about the legislature's override of the governor's veto of the so-called driver's license bill, I guess?
Sure. We talked this about a couple of times already, but we'll do a little refresh for everyone. The legislature has overrided the governor's veto on a bill to allow certain undocumented immigrants the ability to get a Massachusetts driver's license. Around us, Connecticut and New York already provide undocumented immigrants a driver's license. They are already here in Massachusetts driving if they're from Connecticut or New York. Unlike Connecticut, New York, and other states, we actually have a much more limited scope. The scope is that you must have a valid U.S. passport, or you have a document from the local consulate, whether it be here or New York or D.C., verifying your identity, even if your passport is expired. By the way, getting a consulate document is a little harder than people realize. But basically, it verifies identification. And why do we use these documents? The documents are used because RMV currently already processes people visas to get driver's license that are here legally. And the passport's one of the verification documents. So it isn't like they don't know how to do this. Secondly, people who are here legally on a visa and their visa expires and the federal government does not renew the visa on time results in an undocumented immigrant. The funny thing is, since their tax ID number or their social security number is not tied to their visa, they can still work because the IRS does not care.
And still drive, right, with a valid license.
Well, actually, they can't still drive, but the license expires, but they're waiting for their visa to be renewed.
Okay.
They cannot get a license. They are now undocumented. People don't realize that a pending application for renewal results in undocumentation. Your license expires in that time period, which we saw during COVID more than once. I got constituent calls on this. They can't get a renewal.
Oh, so undocumented immigrants are still paying taxes.
Oh, yes. Don't think that's not happening. They're definitely paying
taxes. One of the arguments against this.
Oh, no. The IRS and Social Security are not ICE. They're different critters. So as a result, we have different government agencies working. They don't work in synchronous. You could have a visa that's been expired. The IRS doesn't care. They just want to collect your taxes.
Okay.
Social Security just want to collect your Social Security and Medicare money. So, I mean, they're all siloed out. So, you know, you got to become undocumented because your visa expires or, you know, and then your ICE does not renew. Because during the Trump administration, I discovered that they intentionally backlogged people to create undocumented. They either through underfunding of the agency or administrative law changes regarding, you know, how to correct errors in a form, such as a misspelling, you know, they would be much more severe in reapplication of the renewal. You know, in the prior administration, if you had like a spelling error, they didn't come on to you like a ton of bricks.
Okay.
So if some of you are thinking that, oh, well, it's, you know, you should be trying to stand it, I'm like, all right, fine. I mean, you screw up your driver's license application by misspelling, you call me and you tell me it's a mistake. And, you know, I don't deal with hypocrisy well, as you guys all know. So, I mean, you know, if you feel that a small error is something the government should be able to address, unless it's like, you know, like a document that has been, you know, signed, sealed, and sworn over testimony where they should have been shouldn't be a spelling mistake to begin with. Mm. You know, the ICE has been very brutal on illegal immigrants the last 4 years regarding their visa documentation, whether it be green card, work visa, student visas, or the other almost 200 visa types that are out there. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of different ones. So, the other argument the governor made was that it affects voter registration.
Right.
So how many here got their license before they were 18 years old? Yeah. So the argument is that the IRB cannot deal with voter registration properly because you have a visa. Well, we were doing auto voter registration since the mid 2010s, and then we had opt-in registered voting before that. Then of course I've done in person voter registration, and you don't tell me people under 18 did not fill out their form accidentally.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. It just has to go through a verification process.
Exactly. Same thing will happen with the people with valid passports and valid consular documents. Will go through the same verification process. The system's already in place. Secretary Galvin assures us of this. And, I remember when they used to do this on paper in front of supermarkets in my 20s, signing people to register to vote. All kinds of, things were happening. You had no idea if they were right. And they couldn't validate you at the time of. Right. Some people all that Joe shared the clerk's office, and clerk's office will send you a piece of mail saying that you're a registered to vote or you aren't, so they just toss you out. Right. So the system's in place. I mean, it's one of those things, like, it's a little bit disingenuous, particularly those of us who've done voter registration in the past that know how this works. It's a little disingenuous saying that, you're going to create undocumented illegal voters. I'm like, no, if that was the case, every 17-year-old kid would be a registered to vote, right? And also one of the things it does is mandates driving lessons. You have to go to driving school.
Yeah.
I assure you, a lot of us didn't go to driving school. I actually did because, I'm still the age where it was paid by BC High.
Yes.
Today, you don't see that anymore. It is an unfortunate part of our road that many schools no longer provide driving school as a extra curriculum after school for students. That is unfortunate. I think we should have that. But, it's up to the choices of public and private schools how to go about it. My nephew was talking about my brother. I took him to his driving test. I got very nervous, but he passed.
Oh, very good.
So the most important part, he is licensed.
Okay. Yeah. It's changing times for sure. And it sounds like this bill changes with the times.
No, absolutely. And like I said, it doesn't create this massive influx. So certain folks that won't get it, of course, don't have a passport. As you may not realize, not everybody owns a passport. Mm-hmm. So the scenario I always give is that if you are a South Central American country, and this is real, you're fleeing murderers, rapists from your village because the local cartels have just overrun the government. And you're from a small community, the odds are pretty good you don't have a passport.
Right, right.
And this is happening in real time, too, in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Polish border stops Ukrainians with no passport. A lot of Ukrainians cannot have a passport because their home is no longer there.
Right. Yes. And the infrastructure to get a passport is no longer there.
That's absolutely correct. So you have people who are trapped on the border of Poland, Romania, and other places who can't enter because they have no valid document. So Kyiv, the capital, has to get these passports processed. But again, if your home's been blown up,
how do you verify that the person actually lived in that country? Yeah.
This is a real world problem.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it closes the door. Another door it closes to folks that cannot get a license in this bill is political refugees.
Okay.
Not everybody is recognized as a political refugee by the government. They're not. Not surprising, you have undocumented political refugees. I use the Falun Gong as my example. They're are considered illegal in China, their philosophy and practice, and they will be arrested on site. Hmm. So no surprise, a lot of Chinese or petitioners try to get out of the country any way they can, and they're undocumented in the U.S. If they go to the Chinese consulate for verification of documents, they'll come up in the system, they'll arrest them in the consulate.
Is that right? Wow.
Because you are in Chinese soil when you're staying in the consulate.
Right. I see. Okay. And you're violating Chinese law. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why U.S. citizens who are criminals do not go to U.S. consulates.
Right.
Because so if you're like,
they'll be arrested there. Yeah.
If you're wanted in the U.S. and you go to France and you go to the French U.S. consulate in France, they're going to arrest you.
Right. Since walking into your neighborhood courthouse.
Pretty much sums it up. Yeah. So that's kind of how that works. So, certain political refugees or people who practice certain philosophy or faiths, you know, who are here undocumented, that cannot get asylum for whatever reasons or cannot get asylum quickly, will find themselves also unable to get a driver's license. They can't get driver's license either. Okay. So the scope is actually very limited.
There is a, I'm sure you're aware, a Republican effort underway to upend this. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah, not the first time we've had ballot questions to overturn the legislature's decision. Some of them have been valid. For example, they actually able to overturn the sales tax on alcohol. They overturned that, the voters. They prevented the cost price index to the gas tax. But on the flip side, the voters also upheld transgender civil rights.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
So the voters have upheld laws as well that the voters feel were valid.
Let's talk a little bit. We're talking about voting. Let's talk about the voting bill that was passed.
Well, the voting bill is on the conference committee. I think it's going to be on the docket today.
Ooh, okay.
So the House should take it up first. And basically, it's what you've already got. I mean, we didn't really do anything expansive. We changed the voter registration deadline from 20 days from election to 10 days to election. Should we get reshorted by 10 days? But otherwise, pretty much everything you've been doing for 2 years is pretty much going to be the same. You can vote by mail, have to get the form, the specific deadlines. Again, early voting has been codified. You've all been used to this, voting during the weekdays at a designated location by a city or town, and then at least one weekend day designated by a city or town. And then one new thing we put in there, which is kind of new, kind of not new, is municipalities can choose whether or not they want to do mail-in voting.
Oh, okay.
So this is an issue of administrative costs. So if your city or town decides that, you know, we like to do this by mail-in voting, you know, they can do that on their own. But people who live in towns, you know, obviously you have spring elections, not November, and September, November elections. So you guys have spring elections in towns. And, you know, it may actually help turnout, actually. Mm-hmm. Those who've watched some town elections notice the town turnout is actually pretty small. So it's no real change, guys. You've been doing this for a couple of years already. It's same as always regarding early voting, in-person, mail-in voting, as well as the registration deadline. So, but we didn't do a number of things that was in the Senate bill that includes same day voting registration. We did not do that in any form. And that was the one that was actually particularly contentious.
Yep.
So yeah, it's on its way. And I honestly think that 2 years of voting the way we've been doing, I think people got comfortable with it. Honestly, people tell me they like doing it. Mm-hmm. And I heard someone to me just did not say they like do it. And, you know, the city clerk, particularly in Quincy, has done a remarkable job. Nikki and the folks down there has done an incredible job on implementation. First year is always rough, but once they iron out the edges after the primary, you know, November was easy the first during the 2020 COVID year.
Yeah, they had a great relationship with the post office, actually. So they were able to take the mail-in ballots before they headed into Boston and just, you know, keep them in the city. So it just made things faster.
No, absolutely. U.S. Postal Service, you know, continues to be a very great partner in this. And I think people won't see a real difference in terms of how they vote. So it should work out fine. And of course, you know, our traditional overseas ballots for military and people out of country, you know, will still be there anyway.
Right.
And that changes.
And it looks like, I don't know, but the governor hasn't voiced any big concerns about it that I've heard. So it looks like he probably would sign it if it passed.
I would think so. Like I said, it's other than the voter registration date change in terms of the deadline shift reducing by 10 days. It's pretty much the same stuff we've been doing.
Right. sales tax holiday has been set.
August 14, 15, is it?
Yep.
So under the law, the legislature has to pass a resolution setting a sales tax holiday, I believe, before end of June. So if we didn't, the governor's office through administration finance would set the date. So the legislature has been relatively on time on getting this done. And, you know, we'll suspend the sales tax for 2 days. I think we've been doing this so long, everybody knows the drill at this point. You know, no cars, no boats, no cigarettes.
No alcohol.
No alcohol. No taxes, you know, gambling, no lottery. I mean, you know, it's anything under $2,000 is a single unit item. So, I mean, obviously no huge ticket items. You can't buy, you know, $7,000 fur coat that you're looking for. You know, again, Massachusetts sales tax only applies to non-essential goods. So like food isn't taxed. That is a wholesale packaging, meaning you didn't buy a individually wrapped packages like a candy or something, but you buy a head of lettuce. Yep. It's different packaging. Certain things like periodicals are not taxed. So, you know, you have a lot of things in the state that are unlike other states where they literally tax everything. But, you know, it's a good chance for people to get to end of summer shopping, yep. Pre-school start shopping, take advantage of clearance sales. Perhaps as we head to the month of August, and
yeah, it's a big weekend for like electronics and appliances and furniture, stuff like that.
We get a very good deal, actually. People maybe who watches the market has noticed that Target and other big retail stores have taken a huge drop in stock.
Yes,
and the reason is because they can't move inventory. A combination of inflation and inconsistent supply has kind of screwed this up for them. So when you're doing retail, man, restaurants and other businesses to service people, you buy based on projected demand. Mm-hmm. You don't buy more than you need because mm-hmm. that's just losing money. Well, because of how things have been moving around the world, it hasn't moved on time.
Right. And so it's with a whole lot of stuff.
Results in a whole lot of stuff that's out of the projected season of purchases. Plus you throw in inflation and, you know, of course, you know, people have different comfort levels in shopping and COVID. Right. And of course, the impact of online delivery has really impacted conventional retail, especially including giant retail. So you may be seeing some sales through the summer as they evaluate their inventory and decide they need to get things off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And I know supply chain, we talk about, is always still inconsistent, especially in the retail world. But from their standpoint, given how things are working and inconsistencies, the best thing to do is unload what they got quick.
Right.
Clear shelf space.
It's cut your losses, basically, is what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, get ready for the next season because, right. Like in clothes, you buy per season. You don't want to buy down jackets in the summer.
Right.
And those are things you get in the fall. So they're all right now scrambling to deal with this movement of goods out of their stores to ensure that they have the proper stuff during when the season arrives. And there's still no guarantee that's going to work out.
It's true. They don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the third biggest port in the world is in Shanghai. It's the second biggest port. It's one of the biggest ports. And they've been on and off through COVID. Right. And you've seen the California ports and the New York ports all gummed up because of just people trying to get in and out stuff quickly. But then, you know, you have COVID infection, you have a shortage of workforce. You have container problems because you don't have enough containers. Of course, the price of fuel is ginormous now, as you all know, which adds to shipping cost issues that weren't anticipated in the middle of shipping processes. It's a lot of things going on at once.
I'm going to ask you again, Tacky, because there's been a development in the so-called app-based ballot question with the state's court issuing a ruling. How do we explain this so people can understand it?
Okay, let's try this again. Sorry, I still got this little allergy thing in the throat. Yeah. Okay. The court ruled that the ballot question did not ask one policy question. So for you to get a ballot question to the voters in Massachusetts, the question must ask one question. You know, for example, would you like to change ice cream from chocolate to vanilla? One question. However, you can actually include that in that question, changing chocolate to vanilla, the process involved of how to exchange the ice cream one for the other. So for example, I mean, you know, we're going to exchange chocolate for vanilla. In that process, we're going to pay the people who have chocolate ice cream inventory over, you know, one extra dollar. And then we're going to create a new procurement process for vanilla. That sounds like more than one question, but it's not. It's addressing how to deal with that one question, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm exchanging one item, chocolate, for vanilla, but I create a process on how to do it. that is still considered a single question by the court because it's relevant to the question.
Okay.
The gig worker ballot question ran afoul in one area, which is interesting. It asked two questions. Question one is the definition of an independent contractor that the Uber Lyft guys want to create. Second question is to shield the company from all liability from that independent contractor. That's where they ran afoul, because what they did was that they created a definition for an employee to not be an employee, and they created a definition for an employer to receive a different benefit.
Two different questions. Okay.
Well, yeah, now you understand what I'm going here. Two different questions. Yeah. The paper tries to explain it, but my example is much more vivid.
Yes, I agree.
So because there's a mechanism here to address creating an independent contractor, but there's also a separate mechanism that shields the employer from all, I'm sorry, the employer from all actions of the independent contractor or the contractee from the action of the independent contractor, those are separate issues. And the court's logic is this. You may like the idea of the independent contractor definition change. You may not like the idea of contractee, the employer, having zero liability.
Right.
But
you don't get the chance in that question to choose.
Exactly. You don't have ability to choose which one you like more. Hence, two questions, which will confuse the voters, which way the court threw it out. Now, they can come back again for the 2024 election. Mm-hmm. They'd have to start over a signature process this fall. They would have to start getting their question in place. They can start that process now. But the Ubers of the world need to think now about how they're going to attack the issue. Mm-hmm. Do they just do two ballot questions? Shield us from liability. Well, that's a no-go. I don't think the voters will go for that. They don't like the word no liability in corporation.
Right.
How would they just go with this independent contractor definition and not attack anything else regarding their corporate interests? It's an interesting issue. Or they can thread the needle and somehow say that the liability is solely on the contractor, the employee contractor, if you want to call it whatever you want to call it, on the employer's, on the employee slash contractor's action. And but how do you thread that in a manner where you can't sue the employer?
They're going to have to get more expensive lawyers to figure that one out. Yeah,
some people paying a lot more money than I am are now in charge of figuring out how to thread that needle. Right. So you now did two ballot questions this year on the ballot box. One is the expansion of retail alcohol licenses to allow more beer and wine licenses into more retail places, basically doubling what you see today. And then the other one is the so-called Delta Dental one, which addresses the reimbursement rates for dentists. Again, you need to get a dentist insurance person to talk to you. Mm-hmm. But basically, you know, creates a mechanism to ensure that you can get proper healthcare coverage by ensuring that your dental coverage is covered.
A lot's been talked about with that question, actually. I haven't heard much.
It's a little bit of a nuanced question, because when we're talking about reimbursement insurance, people's first instinct is that, well, I'm paying the doctor or the healthcare facility or the dentist or whomever, right? But it's not. You're paying for the services of the individual plus materials. Mm-hmm. That's the part people tend to not realize. You're paying for materials, particularly in dentist offices, where you're not just paying for the service of the dentist. You're paying for, you know, the crown, the replacements on your teeth, the various fillings. That's wrote into the price of the reimbursement. So it isn't like it's separately inventoried.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the insurance companies, you know, dictate through negotiation, but if they're big enough, they don't have to negotiate, you know, the reimbursements for different products, which means that if they don't change the reimbursement rates to the doctors and dentists and other groups, the price of product goes up. Even though labor doesn't rise, the healthcare office, the doctor, dentist loses money.
Yep, because they have to make up that difference, right, in order to provide that service, yeah.
And they don't have ancillary ability to make other money. It's not like they're selling pizza on the side here.
Right, yeah.
It's all built around these insurance rates, unless you have like uber wealthy consumer. The patient's like bleeding money. They can just drop whatever.
I see what you're saying.
I have a bazillion dollars. It doesn't matter, right? I mean, most of us don't have that. So there's a bit of a nuanced, a little more complicated for people to understand, because most of us don't deal with understanding what our insurance actually pay for, nor do we know or have a strong interest in how my healthcare provider is getting paid.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, all we care about as consumers is that it got paid by somebody else, not us.
Yeah, so this one's going to be a hard bell of question to explain to folks.
Yeah, I'm surprised the insurance industry hasn't started a lobby against this. I haven't seen anything about it.
No, just wait. Delta Dental and the other insurance companies are not cheap when they want to keep their reimbursement rates down, because if they keep it down, they save money, or they make money, versus right. actually paying your dentist doctor, you know, plus, you know, fair costs for the rising cost of materials, mm-hmm. as well as the labor costs, which again, you know, can impact you as a customer, because the more insurance picks up, the less they have to try to get out of you as a person.
Yeah. I know we're coming up against time, Tacky, but before we went on this morning, we talked a little bit about the Fed just raising the short-term key interest rate and how that might impact the state.
Yeah, housing prices will not likely go down a lot, because we have a shortage. So that's, you know, demand's there, shortage, price stays pretty high, but it's going to impact how many people can get will get loans, because we see double the interest rate on buying homes, the same thing as the cars and other things. Those on credit cards already play a ridiculous high interest rate if you're paying late. It's just going to make it worse. If you're on any kind of variable rate, it's going to just add cost. And hopefully, but on the flip side, your saving account may rise just a teeny bit on interest. We're discussing about how, you know, getting to 1% would be a wonderful thing to see.
Yes.
Discussing how we're both old enough to remember they were close to the 5-7% at one time in our lives. But I mean, a little bit of savings there. So you can look at treasury bonds and stuff, seeing a slight benefit from the government standpoint. Mm-hmm. The slowdown of home sales and commercial property sales impacts our capital gains. Mm-hmm. So we will see a decline in capital gains in FY23. And of course, all of us do have stocks and retirement funds, right? Is watching the market crash. And the state has been flush in capital gains money because of record highs from late 2022 through 2021, which bolstered our revenues. So we've talked about, you know, good times of year, we're flush of money. Well, not next time out. FY23 is going to see a precipitous, maybe not a decline, but we won't see the same growth. Let's put it that way. I think we will see some growth, but I don't think you're going to see the growth we just seen recently, because capital gains is not going to generate a lot of dividends.
I see. Okay.
And rising wages means more income tax, but those wages aren't rising high enough to offset the declining market. Yeah. So unless there's a huge market rebound sometime this December, where the thing spikes 100%.
Right.
I mean, they're down 20%. We're in a bear market, and it's going to continue to downward slope as interest rates go up, energy prices out of control, inflation's a big problem, labor work shortage continues. And if there is a recessionary period, you know, and it's going to be a weird looking recession, because you have a labor workforce shortage during a recession. That doesn't happen. Generally, it's an employer's.
Typically, unemployment goes up. Yeah.
Because employers are just an employer's in the driver's seat on salaries when recession goes up, because mm-hmm. unemployment is higher. So this is going to be a very funky looking late summer into the fall winter period on the impact of these interest rates, mm-hmm. how it affects the job market. But from our standpoint on the government level, you know, the watching this market crash, because right now in FY23 budget, and this could continue to FY24. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, the smart move for us is to continue our rainy day fund investment, continue to save some ARPA money for the next cycle to see where you can fill gaps in services. And of course, COVID's still here that we're going to have to pay for.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of moving balls here that I think, I don't think actually people don't realize. We actually do look in the future. We don't, mm-hmm. you know, we got money now. Let's spend everything. No, we actually are looking ahead here.
Right.
About what the future may hold based on what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. Does it impact the interest rates on the state's bonds?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When we issue new bonds, obviously, a state's bond rating is fairly good, because we actually have a very controlled mechanism on how much we borrow per year. We're very cautious in this. However, you know, it affects our bond rate. So as we do these massive infrastructure projects because of the federal infrastructure bill, we're going to be passing a huge transportation bond to pay our share, because it's not free money. We have to actually come up with a percentage share of the infrastructure money that the Feds are going to give us, which is about 20% in most cases. You know, we have to come up with our share. We're going to have to pay those interest rates. Okay. Same thing with the school building assistance program. Quincy's a huge beneficiary of school building assistance. Those interest, you know, future projects, the interest rate's going to go up as the city applies for new renovations to the state. We pick up a lot of that cost. Right. We're going to, you know, pick up those interest rates. So the goal for us, again, is to try to keep the budget's debt costs low, you know, under 5%. We try to keep it under 5% of the budget. But if interest goes up, it may infect our ability to borrow, which means it affects how many projects we can do. So projects, because we don't want our debt service to grow. So future Ways and Means chairs, which will probably still be the same ones as far as I'm aware of, we're going to have to make those hard decisions with administration finance and a new governor's administration, but how much they want to absorb more debt in the budget because of the rising cost of interest, or we're going to have to decline the number of projects to try to keep our debt service low. It's going to be a real, the math is going to be very intricate for administration finance and Ways and Means moving forward in the next fiscal cycle.
All right, so there'll be plenty to talk about next time.
There's always plenty to talk about, Joe. It's, you know, I'll sit around and talk about recipes if you want.
Maybe next time. Cooking with Tacky. good time to get a place to get a hold of you.
Sure, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. The office tells me the phone system's working fine. You probably have all experienced a hiccup, and so have we, regarding our phone systems. But, you know, give us a call, hit a button, you'll find someone. We are open. We're still running a skeleton crew. The state is experiencing between 2 and 5 infections of COVID a week now. So I'm still operating in a method that I have 5 employees. I can't have 5 employees sick at once. I would not be able to function.
Right.
I'm the 6th employee. So we are continuing operating on a very, what I consider, intelligent method of skeleton crew. Everyone's working remote and rotating around the office to avoid full office infection. So do come visit us. You know, always happy to see folks, but be aware that we're not fully staffed and trying to avoid complete closing of my office if there's an infection. Email still works, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I've seen a lot of emails. I'm seeing bulk stuff coming in. But also am now getting a lot of emails on the wind and climate change conference committee I'm sitting on. So I'm drowning in emails now because of that. But if you got a problem, you know, regarding, you know, any issues like unemployment, RMV issues, anything, you know, service related, you know, definitely drop a line. We do prioritize those emails above all others. We'll try to, you know, get your help in the best we can. Tackychan.org, again, resource site, just for you to find some phone numbers. And State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook page. I put my hearings and put some useful information on there, so you get it from various sources. And, you know, you can kind of see pictures and see what I've been and what I've been doing, as well as my @TackyChan, that Twitter account. And I'd be remiss to say that today is actually a flag raising state's house for Juneteenth. Juneteenth is this Sunday. Yeah, this observed holiday will be the 20th, this coming Monday. So I wish everybody a happy Father's Day, which is also this weekend, and also happy Juneteenth. I'll see you next.
Thanks so much, Tacky. Always great to talk to you.
Nope, you all take care.